You know, there are a lot of passions. Some days it's sports, other days it's cooking, or music, or just diving into a great documentary. The thing is, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Amazon Prime isn't just about fast delivery. Though getting stuff the same day is pretty great, but it turns out it's so much more. Prime Video, Amazon Music, the whole range of services. It's like a hub for all kinds of curiosity. Prime helps people stay connected to what matters and keeps the journey of exploration going, whether it's watching something inspiring, listening to a new artist, or getting gear delivered fast to chase a new hobby. Prime makes it easier to dive in. So yeah, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. From streaming to shopping, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to get more out of whatever sparks interest. Amazon.com/Prime.
I'm Emma Greed, and I'm the host of the Aspire podcast, a show where I talk to the world's most brilliant minds about building the life of your dreams. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, you're in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610. Let's go around the NFL now, and we do so not in the normal way. I guess the normal way for a Tuesday.
No, we're going into Lincoln. Yeah.
Look at the man. It's in the Lincoln. All right, don't bring that man's personal business into this. B. Scott in the building. What's happening, brother?
I guess once you put it out there on social media, it is kind of the public space. But yeah, man, I'm doing good. Last time I talked to y'all, I was 35. Mm-hmm. This time that I'm talking to y'all, I'm 36.
And I'm
glad to be here, glad to be doing it. I've been on since my birthday, but just not with you guys. So glad to be going around the NFL for the first time as a 36-year-old.
And I guess the way that I should say that, I should have started was, happy belated birthday, B. Scott.
Man, we good. I appreciate
like
that.
Like, I sent you the text, but yeah, we should do this over here.
We've all exchanged our pleasantries.
For the people.
There's been a whole nother birthday since then. My daughter turned 15 after that.
Shout out to baby girl.
I'm way past my own birthday, but I appreciate y'all,
man. You love to see all of that.
Good to be back.
It is good to have you, brother. All right. As we go around the NFL, also worth remembering, 100 days to the start of the NFL season. We are moving and shaking quickly towards that standpoint, that time in the season. And, of course, along with that, we're seeing 20 teams start their OTAs today, and the final five teams that are going to start their OTAs tomorrow include your Houston Texans. Do you anticipate Ariante Ursary going? Because aside from the top two picks in the second round, who is Carson Schweinsteiger, something like that, Schweschinger. Schweinsteiger is a soccer player, my bad. Carson Schweschinger, linebacker out of UCLA who plays for the Browns. And your own Jaden Higgins, who signed deals. In fact, I believe those are guaranteed. Mm-hmm. Like they both signed.
I know Higgins
was the first one
guaranteed deals.
The first second round pick with a fully guaranteed deal.
Yeah. I think those two guys fully guaranteed. Outside of that, second rounders are just sitting out here unsigned. Like, are we anticipating some mercenary in here?
Yeah, I would imagine so. Like, I'd be shocked if we don't get something between today and tomorrow. I do wonder though, kind of just like as a joke, but also for real, like, does somebody in his camp know that they tried as hard as they did to trade for him, and they're trying to be like,
oh, they're gonna bring it up.
You know what? This guy, I know you got him at this pick, but he actually is this pick because you really wanted him and tried to get him, and we all know that you did. So I don't.
Well,
I mean,
we can't even work the money, but I think guarantee is probably what they're.
Yeah.
What you're doing
exactly.
Here.
Exactly. In terms of like just whatever you have in terms of leverage, trying to negotiate that and play that out. I mean, these things are mostly slotted. It's not like the guy's not gonna play.
Yeah.
So I'd be shocked if this becomes like a real thing.
And he will be out there.
Yeah.
He'll be out there. I can't even imagine anything like a Shamar Stewart, who by the way is still sitting out.
Man. Bengals going Bengals. Because again, like, it's kind of wild that this is happening because, as you mentioned, these things are slotted money-wise.
Hey, but Stewart's got a legit – he's playing for the Bengals.
Correct.
People can say whatever they want about the Texans over the years, but they pay their debts.
Yeah.
They pay their guys. Like, you know what I mean?
You can say they overpay.
They at least pay sticker price. There is no, like, you know, financial shenanigans like you have with the Bengals. Stewart got a real like case for, man, these guys might not, they might try to work around trying to pay me. The Bengals are that, you know, known to be poorly managed.
Yeah. And I do wonder, though, how much money Mike Brown got also. Like, is that one of those, because Panty Pendergast were talking about it this morning to some degree. And, you know, the idea of with guarantees, as we've been talking about guarantees, when money is guaranteed in a contract, you have to put it in escrow immediately. Mm-hmm. So, like, no matter how much, oh, this is a 5-year deal and all that money is guaranteed into 5-6 years from now, You have to put that all that money that's guaranteed right when it's the deal is signed into a bank, into an escrow account, so that it's paid out of that, right? So that obviously you can guarantee that that money gets there. That's why sometimes some teams are a little less amenable to guarantees. If it's just, hey, I got to pay you. All right, cool. I'll come up with that money when I need to pay you.
No.
I got to have that money right now. I don't know that we can have these guarantees. Yeah. And of course, I can't imagine that a first round pick guarantee would give you that much of a trouble. However, I do wonder, Mike Brown did have to put some guarantees down in escrow this offseason already with a couple of deals that he did. I do wonder if he looks around, he's like, I don't want to put all that in there.
Mike Brown, I could just picture him and his financial statements are trying to balance his books. Just feels like plugging holes in a boat.
Yeah.
You know, just trying to.
Don't do it. Just I see you thinking about it. Don't, you
know,
do it, Lopez.
Just trying to figure it out, man. I don't know what this man's got going on.
I can't imagine anybody in the NFL would be. I know some have more than others. Be that cash poor?
Dude, isn't it
weird calling a billionaire poor?
Because it's like $17 million, right?
It's not often that you get to call a billionaire poor, but
you
thankfully
broke
for sports.
Rich person.
But it's not like $200 million. It's like $17 million that they would have to guarantee.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it's kind of insane to think.
Cash
I can't think, but it is one of the few reasons that I could come to why this is still so much of an issue. Why are y'all having such a hard time figuring this out?
Yeah. No, it's weird. It's weird. And so I don't think, like, kind of just bringing it back around, you mentioned Ursary. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's anything close to that going on, and so you can be glad that you're not at least not a Bengals fan in this case.
No, for sure. And so that's good to see as we continue around the NFL. How about this? We've talked a lot about the Aaron Rodgers of this all for the Pittsburgh Steelers, trying to see if they ultimately figure themselves out. It seems like there's a level of we're going to wait for Aaron Rodgers. However, there is supposedly a backup plan here for the Steelers because – we were getting to a place where we're asking, what is the drop dead date for the Steelers? I mean, OTAs are starting, right? Do you get to a place where you go, all right, we are no longer willing to wait? And it has been brought up. I think it was on Jeremy Fowler this weekend on SportsCenter brought up the idea that Kirk Cousins is, quote, at least on Pittsburgh's radar at the moment when it comes to it. He said he's had conversations with some people that have led him to believe that Cousins is on the radar if something were to fall through on Rodgers. Cousins has a $37.5 million in guarantees between this year and next year, worth remembering. Do y'all like the idea of the Kirk Cousins as fallback plan for Aaron Rodgers?
No, I don't. Mm-hmm. But it's better than what they got going.
That's where I am.
That's what's so rough about it. Yeah. It's like, no, in any context, if you just ask me, hey, do you like the idea of Kirk Cousins as your quarterback? Not in the year of 2025. Like, Kirk Cousins had his day, mm-hmm. but between age and injury and what we've seen last, the answer is no. But they're so bad at the position. I mean, Mason Rudolph or a rookie, like, it's just not – it's not it. So, I mean, this is what – when we say desperate times call for desperate measures, this is what that would be.
If you want a backup plan in the NFL, I wouldn't want Kirk Cousins. The Steelers? Absolutely yes. Yeah, in their case, I think the answer is yes.
But I feel like there's an argument to be made that if Aaron Rodgers doesn't come through, you might be worthwhile actually just taking this circumstance and finding the lemonade within the lemons of it, which is, should we just be bad?
Well, yeah.
Should we just be bad and give ourselves an opportunity to actually get a quarterback as opposed to what we have constantly been, what has constantly been the MO, which is just good enough and making a lot of chicken salad out of chicken you know what. But is not good enough to get us a quarterback that can actually sustain what we're trying to do, which is win in a meaningful manner.
I think you raise a fair point, but this is where the pride comes before the fall because they don't know nothing about that. That's just not how they've ever really got down.
Right.
They are at the very least mediocre. They got a standard there of at least always trying. So, like, even if they did, no one really does that out loud. I think if they, you know, didn't sign Aaron Rodgers or if they don't end up with Kirk Cousins, it's going to feel that way, right? Like, they're just going to have to accept their lot in life. But like I said, this is where I think the pride comes before the fall because Pittsburgh just is not operated or wired that way. Mm-hmm. I don't think. I'd be surprised by it if they
did. I'd be shocked.
Yeah.
All right. That's fair. And just to round out the Aaron Rodgers portion of the segment, apparently Aaron Rodgers, in talking to a podcast whose name I do not remember and honestly does not matter all that much for this particular instance. I will get it for you for attribution purposes. However, Aaron Rodgers has been out here saying that he was asked if he would be willing to retire as a member of the Packers. And he said that he would, but he has a condition, and that condition would be, they got to ask me, right? Quote, I've thought about that, but I don't understand what the reason is for that. At the same time, I grew up a Niners fan. Most of my favorite players retired as a Niner. He mentioned Jerry Rice and such. And so basically, he circles back around to the idea. I understand the cool thing about it, but if I didn't do it, would it make that much of a difference on how I'm viewed in the Packers' eyes? Close quote. Y'all buying this from Aaron Rodgers?
I mean, buying that he's so self-involved yes. and so self-important that he said this and believes this and thinks this, yes. Like, this sounds like Aaron.
Only if they
ask me. I find it comical. I'm not going to kill him for this. This is on brand for Aaron Rodgers, fairly consistent with who I think he has shown us that he is, and I find it hilarious.
He's saying, in essence, kiss the ring.
Yeah.
Kiss the ring, and yeah. then I'll think about it.
I actually agree with him here.
No, I think it's fine.
I actually, not even I think it's fine. I agree with, like, he is that particular type of dude, which is fair. Is like, hey, man, what does this actually change about my time there? He talked about in another breath the idea of when I retire in 4 years, I'm going into the Packers Hall of Fame. May or may not get my number retired. Whether they do that, that's fine. But in 4 years, I'll be in the Packers Hall of Fame. I'm like, yeah, I kind of find it silly, the idea of, hey, let's sign this one-day contract. And I appreciate that, like, hey, it's an opportunity to, like, have this moment with the team. But for him, like, he's had plenty of moments. He is on the pantheon of their greatest players, talk less of greatest quarterbacks. Like, yeah, that's fine.
It's just
it's cool.
All of that is fine. It's just the line of only if they ask me.
That's it.
Is very... Mm-hmm. For me, off-putting, but also not so much because I've accepted what Aaron Rodgers is. But like the only if they ask me part is, I think, intentionally D-baggish.
You're not wrong. Reggie's not wrong.
To be fair, though, the question was asked of him, sure. right? I think it's D-baggish if you go, hey, I just want to let y'all know, I'm not going to retire over there on a one-day deal unless they ask me. It's like, hey, is this something you want?
But isn't that how it works anyway, though?
Yeah.
Don't the team usually go to the player?
Yeah.
I actually don't know how that
idea?
Works.
Mm-hmm.
Or I have no idea how that works.
Oh, I'd have a hard time believing Brett Favre or Aaron Rodgers or J.J. You think J.J. Watt called Cal and was like, hey, man, what's up with my ceremony?
I think he might.
With my ring of... No,
I'm not saying that he did, but I can see like how Aaron Rodgers... Or sorry, not Aaron Rodgers. J.J. Watt cares so much about this organization, knowing that he, the circumstances made it so that he had to go and play Arizona.
I would be offended on his behalf if J.J. Watt had to reach out to the
man.
And to be clear, I don't believe that happened.
No, certainly. I can see Kyle and Hannah reaching out to him saying, hey, we want to patch this up.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, let's give you a game.
Yeah. Only if they, of course, they're going to ask you. You're Aaron Rodgers, man.
Yeah.
Like, we get you are who you are.
It's just.
They're going to ask only you.
Only if they ask.
That's my point. Like Reggie's not wrong. He's going to be in the Ring of Honor. That's not even a question.
Perhaps the greatest one of the greatest we've ever seen.
Talk about on-brand arrogance. Because like that, and they did ask him, but to just say, well, if they ask me, like if they ask me,
like
I'll
Lopez, kiss the ring.
Kiss the ring. That's what he wants.
Yeah. That's what he's saying. But also to be fair to him, he's earned that.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's that good. He was that guy. Yeah. So, yeah. I mean,
I didn't expect him to go and ask them.
Hey,
can we sign a one-day contract?
Who even aren't they community owned? Who does he even ask? Does he poll
the president?
Does he put an ad in the newspaper? Like, how does it work? Is it a Twitter poll?
Is it a
Pinder poll?
Should I retire as a Packer or not?
Nah, he would probably do that on. It'd be McAfee putting up the poll. He would do it on McAfee.
Oh yeah,
that's how all his. That is his social media now. Like, his social media is, I get on McAfee, y'all talk back through this. Like, mm-hmm. That's what it feels like it is. Some other things around the NFL worth noting. The Indianapolis Colts will be wearing a Jim Irsay patch this season to commemorate their late owner who passed away last week at the age of 65.
Yeah, I think that's a clear move. I wouldn't be surprised if there were other, if the league did something. Or if there are just other ways to honor Jim Irsay when you lose I guess they still call them owners in the NFL. I was going to call them a governor like it's the NBA. But when you lose somebody that's that important to the history of the game and to the fabric of the game, it's an obvious move to pay some kind of tribute to him. The Irsay, I haven't talked about this,
mm-hmm.
but the Irsay thing took me just like complete shock. I mean,
yeah.
I, I hadn't really heard anything about Jimmy. And then all of a sudden, you just get this graphic out there and he's gone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it just kind of is one of those things where you see like time is precious and fleeting and all of those kind of things. And yeah. RIP to Jim Irsay.
Yeah. A reminder, by the way. A couple of things. Lions has signed former NFL tacklers leader. Cunningham.
Zach Cunningham.
Yeah. Oh, he's still in the league.
That's what we were talking about before. I was like, wait, what?
Still in the league.
That's and great.
On a very good football team, mind you, as well. So good for him in making that move. And hopefully it sticks for him. So those are some of the things that are happening around the NFL here in Loop on Sports Radio 610. Again, in tow with us is our guy, B. Scott, who, by the way, are you at all superstitious?
I am not. Mm-hmm. I am not. So superstition kind of goes against my natural inclination to not really care. So, like, you know, so to be superstitious would mean that you would have to give a bleep a little bit more than I normally do. So, like, nah, I'm not really, you know, I kind of just let the chips fall where they may. I have processes. I have things in place. But, okay. but I'm more of a, hey, man, it, as much as Lopez hates the phrase, it is what it
God
is.
Bless.
Either I do well or I don't. Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't, and I just go with it.
That's fair.
It's brought me this far.
That's fair. Somebody said I'm superstitious fire chair Wayne Cheese.
the closest thing I ever got was not splitting the pole with somebody you're walking with. And I stopped, I stopped doing that years ago. But growing, like if we were in college and we were walking, we're not splitting the pole. But I stopped. I grew out of that. That's probably the closest thing as I've ever been to superstition.
Okay, fair enough. All right, you're in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610. You may not be superstitious, but you do come with that heat when it comes to thinking up stuff. So coming up next, let's get B. Scott's thoughts, as we often do on a Tuesday. We'll do that next.
You know, there are a lot of passions. Some days it's sports, other days it's cooking or music or just diving into a great documentary. The thing is, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Amazon Prime isn't just about fast delivery, though getting stuff the same day is pretty great. But it turns out it's so much more. Prime Video, Amazon Music, the whole range of services. It's like a hub for all kinds of curiosity. Prime helps people stay connected to what matters and keeps the journey of exploration going, whether it's watching something inspiring, listening to a new artist, or getting gear delivered fast to chase a new hobby. Prime makes it easier to dive in. So yeah, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. From streaming to shopping, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to get more out of whatever sparks interest. Amazon.com/Prime.
I'm Emma Greed, and I'm the host of the Aspire podcast, a show where I talk to the world's most brilliant minds about building the life of your dreams. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, he's in the studio. His name is B. Scott. He is from Hiram Clark. He's, you know, got a new whip, got an extra year of life, feeling good, feeling great. How are you? And he has some thoughts, ladies and gentlemen.
And I don't want to bring the mood down.
Mm-hmm.
However.
Oh, Lord have mercy.
I cannot celebrate this idea that the Texans wanted to trade up 20 spots to go get Arians.
Let's talk about it.
Yeah.
Let's talk
like,
about it.
Like, for me, and you asked the question, I think, when y'all were talking about this earlier, Reggie, like, do you feel better about the player and the prospect knowing that they were this confident in him to go trade up? My answer to that is no.
Oh,
I feel like, and this is not even about him, okay? I want to make it clear. I think that I like him as a prospect, and I'm obviously rooting for him to be very good, okay? Clearly. However, when it comes to the evaluation and the pursuit of him and the track record of those who were doing the pursuing, it almost makes me feel worse because of how bad of a job that they've done in evaluating offensive linemen. And look, this is, I'm not saying that everybody should adopt this idea. This is just my feeling when I read it. I'm like, I'm not impressed by this.
Mm-hmm.
This makes me, this actually kind of makes me even more nervous when I look at the more recent picks that they've made along the offensive line and how they haven't panned out and how they just done such a poor job of evaluating that position group as a whole. It's almost like the more fervor and the more energy toward an offensive lineman, the less confident that I am in the evaluation, just because I don't have as much confidence in the evaluators in that particular position. And for all the great things that the Texans have done, I feel great about them. But this is the one thing that makes me a little skittish.
And it should, right? Their track record speaks for itself.
I don't know how it's not a little bit.
I think it's a commentary on Blake Fisher, too.
Yeah, I mean, it's on all of them, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I hate to say it, but it's Blake Fisher. It's Juice Scruggs. Obviously, they've sent Kenyon Green out the door.
Yeah.
But, like, the best job that they've done at drafting offensive linemen since they've been here, it seems like, is Jarrett Patterson, in which case you feel like maybe they even got lucky there.
Yeah.
You know, like and I don't want to take credit away. Maybe they actually did a good job of evaluating this particular offensive lineman. But that's somebody that you drafted late that has come in to really fill the holes in the spaces where it did not work out for you, where you invested more capital either in draft or in, let's say, you know, the person that you signed.
I think for me, I'm not with you there when it comes to the fear, or like, fear isn't the right word. I don't want to mischaracterize how you feel about it, but yeah, just the general negative kind of feeling.
It's more mistrust.
Mistrust. Okay, fair. Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate you helping me out there. The mistrust that you have there when it comes to the possible evaluation of Ariante, I think that's probably fairly standard. What it does take me to, and I feel kind of weird putting this here because I think you could usually give Nick Caseri a lot of credit for his movings and shakings in the draft. It makes me side-eye his, like, the machinations, right? Because we were talking about it in the break after that segment. Is it any chance that this was some of the ruminations that was happening before the trade down from one? And I was like, no, it can't be. Like, they were so concerned, focused about moving, you know, what they were doing at one. Mm-hmm. And I have to believe the way that they were moving would have been for an offensive lineman, right? You know, trying to trade up.
In the first round, right? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So they trade back from 25 to 34. All right, that's cool. This reeks of a level of desperation to get that offensive lineman. This belies something that they would not agree to in any sense, which is the idea of drafting for some level of need, right? They're out here like, no, we do not draft for need, whatever. All of a sudden, y'all was trying to go up 20 spots for this guy, Ariante Ursary, but also not selecting him at 34 when you did have the opportunity there if you had a need. Like, it just raises questions on top of the fact of, what you ultimately got moving up that 10 spots from 58 to 48, you gave up pick 99, right? That was the deal that you ultimately made with the Raiders. The deal that was on the table to try and move up to 38, those 20 spots that we've talked about, was 79 and a third round pick next year. Mm-hmm. And it just, like, it also calls into question for me, what is the value proposition of what we're doing here with how you move and shake? And again, if you were willing to do all of that to move up to 38, then why wouldn't you feel comfortable taking him at 34? All these things raise questions. And I understand that there's probably some answers to it. I don't want to make it seem like there's no answers available. I just have questions.
So the best part about that is how you ended that with, well, like, why not take him at 34? I think that's the fairest point. Like, okay, so if you were willing to go that far out, why not take him at 34? I do think that there is an element of trying to get greedy here, maybe where they saw him at. So they're like, hey, maybe we don't need to take him at 34, and I can excuse that. And I can even.
But then you really need to take him at 38 then?
Yeah, yeah. All fair. But I will say, this is one of the things that I kind of do like about Nick Caserio and this regime and how they operate, is that they look at these value propositions and the draft board and all that, and they understand it. Like, don't make any mistake about it. They understand how it all works.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes they'll just kind of Buffett and say, hey, you know, we really want a player. We really have conviction about going in a particular direction. And they are not bound to the rules, so to speak, or to the conventional wisdom. And I can appreciate that, because that's them putting their chest out there. And look, even if you're going to be wrong, I can appreciate having conviction. But then it still goes back to the original point. I like the conviction. I like how they move. I just don't necessarily trust them based on the results that they've given so far. Now, I hope that this bucks that trend, right? I hope Ariante Ursary completely, like, just shatters this whole notion that I'm presenting.
Mm-hmm.
But that's how I felt reading it and consuming it in real time. It's like, y'all ain't did this right for the last few years or so.
No,
and
that's
for the last
fair.
Few rounds of it.
To Reggie's point, I think it's as simple as they didn't think there was any way in hell that Jaden Higgins would last.
Yeah.
They thought there might be a chance that, that Ursary could last. And then they got Happy Feet. Then they got greedy, to your point. And so they wanted to get them both. Hey, how about C.J. Stroud and Will Anderson?
I think that's exactly it.
You know what I mean?
No.
You know, there are a lot of passions. Some days it's sports. Other days it's cooking or music or just diving into a great documentary. The thing is, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Amazon Prime isn't just about fast delivery. Though getting stuff the same day is pretty great. But it turns out it's so much more. Prime Video, Amazon Music, the whole range of services. It's like a hub for all kinds of curiosity. Prime helps people stay connected to what matters and keeps the journey of exploration going, whether it's watching something inspiring, listening to a new artist, or getting gear delivered fast to chase a new hobby. Prime makes it easier to dive in. So yeah, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. From streaming to shopping, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to get more out of whatever sparks interest. Amazon.com/Prime.
I'm Emma Greed, and I'm the host of the Aspire podcast, a show where I talk to the world's most brilliant minds about building the life of your dreams. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
And I ultimately, this is the funny thing, is while this raises questions for me on, okay, what is the decision-making matrix? I kind of love the way that it ended up falling out. So yeah. Like, I do need to give them credit for ultimately getting to a place where this worked out, but
That's actually a good point, Rick. This was a dub.
I do want to make this clear.
I came here with the negative energy, but we should. I think you did a good job of that. This is a net W.
100%. Yeah. I think so. I think maybe this is why you don't ultimately see how the sausage is made, right? Because when you see how the sausage is made, you go, wait, the sanitary standards back here is a lot less than what I thought. Like, I thought this was a lot more machine-like, and though there's a little bit more wiggle to this sausage making process than I anticipated. Maybe that's what this ultimately is, and maybe that's the way that we ultimately deal with this or look at this in hindsight, if we look back at this in hindsight at all. But in the moment, I'm just like,
yeah. Now, I also want to get to Lopez's point about the different feel or change in expectation. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I got necessarily, maybe my change in expectation is more so not, hey, you got to be good or you're going to be good, but it is more of a, I think this guy's going to play more sooner rather than later.
Yeah.
Right. Like that is where the expectation changes for me with the guy.
I can't get over the fact that they were willing to move up more than half a draft.
Yeah. And then I go to,
oh, like half a round?
Half a round.
Half
a round.
But I got you. Half a round. And then I can't help but keep going back to this idea of he's just going to be a tackle. He's not going to play guard. They've spent money at tackle. They have options on the right side. He doesn't play on the right side. He is a mammoth of a man.
The pick dude.
So I just, I don't know. I know they've said, and maybe it's to kind of, you know, keep down the expectation of, hey, we don't want y'all thinking this guy's going to be a guard and we don't even know if he can do it yet.
Right. Yeah.
But knowing this now makes me think, okay, well, I don't see room for him to play at tackle unless what they got there just completely ain't going to work out or somebody gets hurt. Could he still be somebody that they slide inside? I know they said they won't, but now,
hey, we can start to find out tomorrow.
And we know how they move, right? They move tackles inside. We've seen it before. Mm-hmm. So Can I
counter you with something that is maybe equally or maybe even more absurd?
Yeah.
Are we so locked in on the idea that they have Cam Robinson anchored at left tackle?
I think so.
No, I think that's a possibility.
Is there a possibility? Because, again, absurd. We're just spitballing right now. Is there a possibility that Ariante Urshery starts at left tackle? You move Cam Robinson, experienced player, but over to the right side. And I know Nick Caserio in this organization has talked about how moving dudes around is all willy-nilly. Like, it's not something that, you know, you should take lightly. However, they have had a willingness to do it when they need to. And what that would do, especially for a Titus Howard that has played left tackle, or left guard, rather, and not really having a right guard that you feel like is either really good experience or whatever, mm-hmm. or if you maybe end up with somebody who is in there who is less experienced, it allows to Urshery play next to a Howard who is an experienced guy. Maybe it gives you a little wig room to play. One have, you know, maybe a Robinson on the right side with somebody who has a little bit less experience possibly at right guard. Like, if that is something that is, if we're getting wild with it, is there any way that that could happen?
They got a lot of different possibilities on the mm-hmm. offensive line, but every path that we go down with this, every idea feels like a separate commentary on someone else.
Oh, yeah.
Because if that happens, then what does that say about so-and-so? And mm-hmm. I'm not trying to call guys out, but like in Reggie's example mm-hmm. here, okay, so now what does this say about Blake Fisher? Okay, so like, I mean, he's your swing tackle. Mm-hmm. You've also signed, you know, Trent. Like, you, so it, like, so what does that say about how they feel about the other players that are now being displaced based off of this draft pick? And then the fact that it happened, you know, at a position, not at the position that we were expecting them to address. It's at tackle, like the musical chairs is happening at tackle, and then we all still looking at guard like, so what's happening here?
See, and I think
it's Tytus Howard and Ed Ingram?
Yeah.
Laken Tomlinson.
Laken Tomlinson. I mean,
if I was forced to power rank him, I'd put Laken Tomlinson over Ed Ingram.
But I think all this is a product
of... But it's played more right.
Like what Reggie's saying, the possibility, the absurd thing is, as he's talking about it, is all a product of the clarity now, just how much they liked him. The fact that they moved up 10 and could have moved up 20 says a lot about what they think of him, and that I think everything's on the table.
Yeah. Or maybe how little they care about like the actual draft capital or the way that we view draft capital. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's it. I don't know.
And what does them liking an offensive lineman even mean? If his name's not Laramie Tunsil, an obvious, what is them liking an offensive lineman? What is the significance of that? What is that good? Is that a good thing for the Texans?
And Derwin chimes in here on the YouTube. Hopefully it means that the best guy will be at each position. Things like Dare, the automatic third down back. Who is the best? That's all I care about. I think who is the best is one thing to care about. The secondary question after that is, how do they compare with what standard is or what expectation is at that position across the league? Because, again, you're not competing against yourself. You are in some ways. Last year, you've got to be better than last year, but you're also competing with, you know, the 31 other teams in the league and how you're able to deploy this offensive line. So a lot of interesting things that we will take another step towards finding some answer to tomorrow as OTA start for your Houston Texans, including we'll get some conversation. We'll hear from D'Amico Ryans and select players tomorrow. And, of course, you'll get that audio as soon as we can get it to you right here on Sports Radio 610. B. Scott's thoughts. You love to hear it, man. You really do. Sticking around for one more segment, as he always does, in which we've talked about what's popping, including I would like to talk about a little bit of movings and shakings with U of H, but also we either talk college football or we talk a little NBA basketball. One thing we will talk. We'll do that next. All right, let's get into what's popping here in the loop on Sports Radio 610. I will begin by speaking directly to Ocho. Ocho, this portion of the segment is for you, but it's also for anybody who cares about University of Houston Cougar basketball. That is a program that took it all the way to the national championship game and was this close to getting over the hump and ultimately redeeming years and years of trauma. Unfortunately, that wasn't the case. And so they go again. Upcoming season, they've put together a really good class of guys coming in. But also, don't forget the returners, which also now includes Milos Yuzan. Milos Yuzan had gone to the NBA draft, and he was trying to go through the process after the combine and everything. He has now decided to withdraw himself from the draft and return to the court, return to UH. So, you know, your ball dominant, you know, point guard will be there. However, it does come at a little bit of cost. Pops Isaac, who was going to be a transfer guard from Creighton, very good guard, you know, probably could have really helped this team. He will now no longer be transferring to UH. He'll be transferring to Texas A&M. Fellas, like, what was your big takeaway from the Milos Yuzan returning?
Yeah, so shout out to Milos Yuzan for taking in the information and making a solid decision, which I assume if you're not going pro and you're going back to college, that, you know, you were given some information, saw some things that would make you do that. So, that was my big thought on him. But the wider or larger implication for U of H is losing Pop Isaac. Like that. That's the big thing. These things have to be related, obviously, right? You get the news around the same time, and you would think, hey, why can't those two guys play together? LJ Cryer's gone. His eligibility is done. Mm-hmm. Why can't he just fill in that role? Well, you could see how these two guys would want to be the lead guard, or how one would want to be the lead guard wherever it is that he goes to transfer. And he'll get to do that at Texas A&M. This is actually a cooler thing. Like, for me, not necessarily being a U of H or Texas A&M guy, but, you know, following both of their programs, now I get to get them both. You know, like, U of H is still going to be good, still going to be just as relevant as they ever were. And now I think even A&M, which is also has been relevant, but going through a regime change, is also going to be a really fun team to watch. So I think we get really fun college hoops in the state of Texas.
This is win-win because, obviously the Aggies get a 25-point scorer with the new guys that they've got. Uzan comes back. And they got that kid out of San Antonio that's like the number one point guard. You ask why they maybe what weighed into Pop Isaac's decision?
Yeah.
They got that kid out of San Antonio that apparently is going to be ball dominant and a stud. So they win. Aggies win. Can't lose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I would just say to Milos, next time, don't pick up your dribble and be confident with your shot. Don't let that, like, that ball should not have ended up in Emmanuel, God bless Emmanuel Sharp's heart. But Milos Uzan and LJ Cryer both touched that ball on that last possession. Mm-hmm. And one of the two of them should have shot it, damn it. And Milos Uzan had it first. Next time, shoot the damn ball, Milos.
That is elite Southern slander. Yeah. Bless his heart.
Yeah.
That is elite.
Bless his heart.
Like, bless his heart. Like, you know, it sounds nice, but we all know what you're saying.
I mean, we seen how my man dribbled the ball off his leg on that possession before.
Just staring at it.
Like, hey, man, why does he have the, like, he's a good shooter, but, man, this is the last shot of the game. One of these other cats need to take the shot. Mm-hmm. Don't pick up your dribble. Be confident.
Yeah, that's fair.
I'm glad to have a homie back.
I ain't forgot. It sounds like it too. Happy Hunter Brown Day to you. Is something that is worth saying.
Oh, that's a good point.
Mm-hmm. That is it.
Hunter Brown Day.
It happened.
Calling it that now.
That is what I have taken to calling it. He is on the mound opposite JP Sears for the A's, who's 4-4 with a 4.0 ERA. So the Astros welcome in the Athletics to Daikin Park. That happens tonight, 7:10 p.m. Obviously, we don't have lineups, but how did you feel? Obviously, coming off this weekend, 3-1 against the Mariners was good. There was obviously some good things that happened within that, including Jose Altuve getting back on the schneid, having, you know, some offense. Although all of his RBI actually came in that game on Thursday. The rest of the weekend was just, you know, hits, mm-hmm. which I'm not going to be upset about, but, you know, just hits. Outside of that,
just hits.
Yeah. Yiner Diaz gets dropped all the way to 7th mm-hmm. over the weekend. Like, how are we feeling there with what Yiner has been dealing with this season?
Yiner is just a roller coaster, man. Maybe it's bad on me to be at this point, but I've just accepted that he's going to be an up and down type of player. He's going to have some highs. He's going to have some lows, but he's not going to be like, you know, how the morning show, how Payne and Pendergast does mm-hmm. the circle of trust.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If I were to do one of those myself, he would be outside of mine pretty much constantly. And I'll just take whatever it is. Like if I get something from him that makes him trustworthy, I'll take it, but he's not going to be in that circle. I'm okay with it. The big thing for me was really the Christian Walker thing. Like I'm starting to feel a lot better about that. And it ain't because of the superstition and all of that, but I think that, it's early baseball crowd. This mm-hmm. is kind of a dub for them because sometimes you just need to work out of whatever it is or adjust to your change of scenery. And look, they've been able to figure things out without Christian Walker being good, without Yordan being healthy. He's missed, 22 games now straight? Mm-hmm. So, like, that to me is, like, the upside for the Astros, and also to point out that the field looks like it is manageable
as
well.
I think we're going to see more split time at the catcher position. Yeah. We were talking about that off air.
Yeah.
Caratini has been good. Yeah, that's rough.
Caratini has been good. Also worth noting, when it comes to the roster construction, he's one of those guys that can actually hit from the left side.
Yes.
One of the few, especially without Yordan. He's the guy who can hit from the left side.
And it's not like they're going to throw out a lot of guys, no matter who's behind the plate.
Yeah.
Right.
They're not doing that. He goes, you know, to the left, as Reggie was saying. And by the way, pity the A's today, because you know Hunter Brown, after his last outing, is going to want to bear down.
It's a night game, baby.
At home at night.
Night game, baby.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Hunter Brown's going to cook.
That
feels like, and I know his last out and out mm-hmm. was standing, but like that feels like the most reliable thing that you got. One of the more reliable things that you got.
Yeah.
Maybe outside of Isak Paredes.
Yeah.
That might be the most reliable.
No, he is.
I was going to say, what is the most reliable? What is the most?
I think Paredes is probably.
Yeah. But it's more because as a fielder, you get an opportunity to affect this double time, whereas mm-hmm. at the plate and also defensively.
And every day.
And and every day. And he's doing all that.
But I mean, even within the context of what you do, like just, you know, so granted that a starter doesn't pitch every day.
Yeah.
But when he plays.
Tell you what, outside of that one outing, I'd go Hunter Brown on that one.
Oh, yeah.
But that's a good discussion, right? That's close. Yeah. Like, I think I might lean Paredes, but Hunter Brown is the most appointment television for the Astros for me.
Yeah, I've been thoroughly impressed by Isak Paredes as well.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. Like, I don't have that as good as he's been, you know, how when Yordan's healthy, like, you got to sit down for a Yordan at bat. Mm-hmm. You can't get up and go to the bathroom or go get a beer. You got to sit down for a Yordan at bat no matter what.
Yeah.
They don't have a guy like that for me right now in the lineup, as good as he's been, but Hunter Brown is that. Like, I got to watch mm-hmm. every pitch that he throws.
So
every single one.
Agreed. Mm-hmm. Agreed. And,
and there's nobody else like that on the pitching staff.
And it's not difficult to do either. Like the level of sitting on the edge of your seat, looking for what he is going for, like what is he trying to do? Where is he trying to attack? It pays off when you're sitting up and watching Hunter Brown. So, you know, schedule your appointment viewing around that. 7:10 is when the Astros get going tonight versus the A's. Also, we have a couple of conference finals going on in basketball that are, I would say, phenomenal. Like, how have you been taking these in, including what was just one of the wildest basketball games, a very, very good, well-played basketball game on both sides, high scoring. It feels like we are just getting all of the things that people who have clamored about not enjoying basketball of late have wanted in the package of this Western Conference Finals in particular, but also just these conference finals in general.
Yeah, I've been most impressed by Oklahoma City just having no weaknesses. Mm-hmm. Like, they just have no weaknesses in their game. They're excellent defensively.
Deep.
They got depth. They can put the ball in the basket. Like, they just can do everything that you need to do. I also like with Minnesota that they're doing this against a Minnesota team that is, I think, very well built, like in the sense of like their personnel, the way that they can kind of duplicate everything, the drive, kick and score and shoot. Like everybody on every guard, everybody that plays for them can do a similar thing, say for Rudy Gobert, right? Yeah. Who's a specific kind of player. But everybody else can put the ball on the floor, can shoot, can get to the paint, can pass, right? So, like, they got all of these guys that do all of these things well, and they defend, and Oklahoma City just has an answer for it. It has an answer for all of it. And so I really like that. And then on the other side, how the Pacers and the Knicks both have this I'm-a-walk-you-down kind of nature to them, right? Like, the Pacers have obviously been doing this. They have more come-from-behind victories in the last minute of a game, down 7 points or more, than anybody has had in the history of basketball, and they haven't even made it to the finals yet, right? So that's the Pacers. And then the Knicks were doing this, what they just did to the Pacers in game three, they were doing this to the Celtics too, even before Jason Tatum got hurt.
Yeah.
So both of these squads are walk them down types, and like it's just a fascinating watch between the two of them. So like the conference finals have been sublime.
I think the fascinating thing to me is this concept, this narrative of, you know, Anthony Edwards should have taken over more, should have been a superstar, all this other stuff. I think it was just a credit to Oklahoma City.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really do.
I thought maybe
he could have commanded more shots, but could he?
No, Kendrick Perkins made a really good point on ESPN this, but I think it was either on Get Up or on First Take
Pride
this morning.
Pride of Beaumont, Texas.
Yeah, shout out to Beaumont Ozan. He made the point of, look, when you score 120-something points, it ain't really no more about how you didn't score. Like, you can look at it and say, hey, Anthony Edwards should have done more. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you expect him to score more, to shoot better. But as a team, the offense was taking care of it. They could not defend Oklahoma City in this case. Right. Like, everybody on Oklahoma City was able to get theirs pretty much at will for the most part.
Can I push back on that?
Sure.
I think they were defending Oklahoma City. That game came down to two dudes at the very top who were just doing the – we're not losing middies. Like, they were doing the, I am taking this shot. It is a difficult shot, but I'm going to make it. And Jalen Williams and, of course, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander in that fourth quarter.
And the offensive rebounding, you should point out. Right.
That is fair. Both of those teams were off him. There was not a lot of defensive rebounding to be had in that game because both those teams were rebounding at such a high level. The thing that I'm going to talk about in order to bring this back home is these were the type of games at the top, especially with the one last night with Oklahoma City, where I go, that is what you need specifically to be a team at this level. Is everything, you could be doing everything right to the T within a system. You need the people that go above the system to win you basketball games, because that was very much, if you did not have above the system players and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Jalen Williams, even though they were playing incredible basketball, they lose that game to the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Yeah. You need somebody that can take over not just a game, but a series. And they clearly have guys like that. But really all four of these teams, to their credit, have guys like that, no matter who wins the series. All four of them have that. And, of course, that we don't have that.
Hey, you know, I'm the guy that always says, you got to have that guy. You got to have the stars. You got to be able to take those shots, what Reggie's talking about. That particular game last night, I thought, I don't know what more other than the, like, incredibly tough offensive sets that you could have gotten out of Edwards. But
him being involved a little bit more earlier. I think they started
out. He was involved a lot. He just wasn't taking the shot.
Well, that's kind of his
thing. He was off ball a lot. Yeah. And you had the likes of Nikhil Alexander-Walker and Jane Daniels doing. Well, they scored. Like, they were effective. But they were dudes doing all the offense in a way where even the whole first quarter – I mean, his first attempt at basket came with 1 minute left
but
in the first quarter.
But a lot of that
quarter.
Goes credit but, to OKC.
Right, cause, yeah, because yeah, they scored and they were effective. Yeah, yeah. Falls right into the plan. Like, I'll live with them being me and Anthony Edwards being the having the outlier performance if I got to. Or it's always that pick your poison. Mm-hmm. Hey, I'm going to let the guy that's great beat me, but none of the other guys can beat me. Or I'm going to let all those guys beat me and we're going to shut this guy down. Which one do you do? And this one obviously worked out for Oklahoma City. But with Anthony Edwards, though, he even talked about this. Like, I actually agree with him. Hey, I was making the right play, making the right pass.
I kind of did, too. And again, that's counter to what I usually think.
But the whole point is, and I don't know if Anthony Edwards is consuming it this way, but it is, hey, that was the plan.
Yeah.
Y'all played right into the hands mm-hmm. of what I think they were hoping would happen, and they trusted, hey, we can beat, you know, the other Alexander, right?
Totally,
we can beat
agree.
SGA's cousin, Nikhil Alexander
are they
Walker.
Cousins? I didn't pick up.
They
on
are.
That.
They are. Yep.
Regarding his cousin, we get it. We know. We've actually known this for a long time.
Oh, really?
But anyway, we'll live with Dante DiVincenzo and McDaniels beating us over, you know, Anthony Edwards matching Shea's 40.
No, I totally agree with that. Now, here's the other question. Knicks, wouldn't it be something if
I don't know if they can do that again for a few reasons. I mean, that was another one of those games where one dude who was playing above what a system is going to be, although some of it was systemic, right? You had Karl Anthony Towns stepping into kind of the role that Jalen Brunson typically plays when mm-hmm. he was out with foul trouble, and then just deciding, I'm going to go above what you guys are doing, no matter what you're doing defensively, and go and win this basketball game. I think that where I come back to with the Pacers is, one, they were not used to that type of game plan, and two, they have a coach in Rick Carlisle who I anticipate goes, okay, I didn't know that was coming.
Yeah.
Try it again.
Yeah.
And at that point, I don't know that you have anything for the Pacers.
That great point, really, on Rick Carlisle, right? And we can all speak to this as like kind of basketball heads. Lopez, I know you as a former – anybody that can appreciate coaching has to respect Rick Carlisle and his ability to make adjustments and to kind of read the game. And this one for me, Pacers Knicks has 7 written all over it.
I would like it. That'd like be something. I would take it.
Edge of our seats type of stuff.
I would love if OKC and Minnesota did, but they're down 3-1. And so, we'll talk more about that later, because I think that there was one thing in that Western Conference Finals game that made it an eyesore. Other than that, other than all that basketball, we'll talk about that later. But B. Scott, we always appreciate you joining us. You're in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, let's circle back around to Tay. Obviously, we know now that he was going to be selected, or they've tried to trade up 20 spots in order to get him. What does that mean more for the Texans? And then also, is there a possibility then, with the way that this offensive line is constructed, that it's going to be an RPO-heavy team? 713-572-4610. Let's discuss that next.
You know, there are a lot of passions. Some days it's sports, other days it's cooking or music or just diving into a great documentary. The thing is, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Amazon Prime isn't just about fast delivery. Though getting stuff the same day is pretty great, but it turns out it's so much more. Prime Video, Amazon Music, the whole range of services. It's like a hub for all kinds of curiosity. Prime helps people stay connected to what matters and keeps the journey of exploration going. Whether it's watching something inspiring, listening to a new artist, or getting gear delivered fast to chase a new hobby, Prime makes it easier to dive in. So yeah, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. From streaming to shopping, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to get more out of whatever sparks interest. Amazon.com/Prime.
I'm Emma Greed, and I'm the host of the Aspire podcast, a show where I talk to the world's most brilliant minds about building the life of your dreams. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, available now wherever you get your podcasts.